In October 2019, we went with a group of young lesbian, bisexual and pansexual women on a residential weekend to the Lake District. The young women came from our Proud Trust groups across Greater Manchester and Cheshire, and we were also joined by young women from Merseyside. They ranged in age from 15 to 24. The purpose of the weekend was to discuss young women's experiences of the spaces we provide and the wider issue of women-only spaces. Over the course of the weekend, the young women also discussed other issues which were important to them. These recordings capture some of these discussions. Here, a group of older and younger women of colour talk about their experiences.
Hi, my name's Elena.
Hi, my name is Nicola. I'm 48 and I'm not a young person, but I used to be.
And I'm Tanzina and I'm 20.
Is that young?
Yeah. So we wanted to do this podcast because it's important for women of colour to have representation, and as a lot of the spaces that we are usually in, we feel like we're the only ones there, and so we have to do something because otherwise no one else will talk about us. So we always feel like we have to be the ones doing something big or talking about ourselves to get out there, to rep.
Absolutely. And I think as a minority, any minority, quite often you're the voice for all the other minorities. Mm. So if you're the only, if you're the woman in the space, you're speaking for women. If you're the black person in the space, you're speaking for the black people. If you're the lesbian, and so on and so on. Which isn't right, and other people should be speaking up for us. But here we are.
Ah, you mean that people that aren't us?
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to be a brown person to talk about and represent for brown people.
True.
Like, you can talk about brown people. You're not representing
them. It's not forbidden.
Yeah, it's not forbidden. If you're a white person who knows about, like, the struggles that they have, you're allowed to talk about it. You should be talking about it.
Yeah.
Using your privilege.
True.
Absolutely. It's like, why should brown people only challenge racism? It shouldn't be. Everyone should be challenging that.
True.
Should we also mention what ethnicities we are? Because I'm a Bengali woman. Mm-hmm. Both my parents are Bengali. I was born in Manchester. Yeah. I was raised in Manchester, raised in England.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a British citizen, but I'm also Bengali.
So do you see yourself? Do you... Okay. I'm Nicola. I'm mixed race. My father is of Jamaican descent and my mother is white British.
Wait, do I say my name? No, it doesn't matter. So I was born in the UK. My father's from here and my mother's from Cuba. And yeah, I was born and raised here, so I've just been here my entire life. I'm Hispanic British.
So I was just going to ask you, Tanzina, if you see yourself as being Bengali or English.
See, that's the thing. When I was growing up, I was surrounded a lot by the Bengali culture.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I was like, but you gave birth to me in Britain. I'm a British person. I'm English. But then as I'm growing up, I'm like, no, but I am Bengali and I'm accepting that more.
Mm-hmm.
So at first it was like, yeah, I'm an English person, but the world doesn't make you feel that. The world makes you feel like, yeah, but your skin's brown, you're Bengali, you're South Asian, like, so I guess that comes into play. But I am Bengali and I am British. End of.
What makes you feel like Bengali in certain
ways? I'm just
wondering, but you don't have to answer it.
I mean, just the culture, I guess. I mean, I'm surrounded by Bengali people at home.
Mm.
I speak Bengali. A lot of the culture I don't personally agree with.
Mm.
But it is my life. It is part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to accept that at some point. And that's fine. Like, at first it was forced upon you. Like, for me, it was forced upon me because my parents, I guess, saw it as more like, I don't want her to get influenced by all these English people in this English environment. I don't want this all to happen. But it did happen because I ended up growing up in England. So I was obviously going to be influenced, or I was obviously going to be exposed, I guess, to different kind of environments and culture. But, like, for example, weddings are, like, one of the big things that are different. Because English weddings and Asian, like, South Asian weddings are completely, utterly different. The clothes are different, the style is different. from what I understand, English weddings have like a bachelor party, and then there's like reception, and then there's all of this. But for us, there's like an olima, and then which I say is sort of like an engagement party, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the big wedding, and the clothes obviously completely different. And you know, there's not a big white dress; it's more of a red sari.
Mm-hmm.
Or now it's changed a bit.
That's really interesting. I think for me, as a mixed race person, I think it's different about thinking about that identity again. About are we how do I see myself? See myself absolutely as an English person because I don't have, like you were saying, a set identity, set religion. We don't have that. So we always dress the same. We only speak one language, which is English. We don't only ever eat English food. So it's not. I don't feel another sense of identity. My identity, mine personally, is just English.
Mm.
No, apart from the colour of my skin, which obviously is brown, I'm thoroughly through and through an English person.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting that you say, "Oh no, I'm Bengali," because you've got that to draw on. You've got that.
Yeah.
You've got that. Even though you don't agree with some of it, it's still your family values, right. and it's the part of what identifies you. As a Bengali person, I don't have that.
I have to be Bengali because both my parents are Bengali, my family is Bengali. I am Bengali, so it's sort of like you're saying you're English through and through because you've got an English family, and then did you say Jamaican?
Yeah, I've got Jamaican family, but it's not been influenced.
Yeah.
And I think even if there was an influence, it still wouldn't be as big an influence because the Jamaicans still speak English, they still pretty much just eat. Do you know what I mean? There's not a separate religion. It's not a separate anything too different, I think.
Like different culture.
Yeah, I think it's quite similar. Maybe. I don't know. What do you feel as a mixed race person?
Well, like, my mum spoke a bit of Spanish when I was at home, like I was mentioning before, but it's only basic things. We don't really speak about the culture much.
Mm-hmm.
I go over every 2 years to see family, which is nice. But as a person, it's a bit weird because I'm British. I feel like when I was going to school, mm-hmm. like I fit in with everyone in some sort of way. But because I'm a person of colour, I sort of didn't fit in with anyone at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know how there'd be those stereotypical groups, like the Asians stick with the Asians.
Yeah.
And the white kids and the popular kids, they have mm-hmm. their own thing, and the goths and whatever. And then there's just like little Hispanic me.
Oh.
Like, what do I do? Where do I go to? Yeah, it kind of feels like that. And because I don't really associate myself, or I don't know what the word is. It might be agree or feel much for like Cuban culture, that I feel like I've looked to other international cultures instead, and that's why I was learning Japanese and seeing like, oh, what other interesting countries are out there and food, because I don't really have that kind of influence at home personally.
Can I ask you a question? Yeah. It might seem ignorant, so I apologise if it does, because you refer to a little Spanish me and a Spanish culture and stuff.
That's fine.
So if you lived in Spain, would you get that culture similar to the Cuban culture? Are they similar, mm-hmm. even though they're way different parts of the world? Or is it just literally that they speak the same language?
I think, from what I've seen, I mean, when I've been to Spain personally, or seen, like, people from Spain, mm-hmm. it feels like there's more of a similarity than language. I feel like there is some kind of culture same. There's mm-hmm. some sameness in culture, like looking out for family or treating people as family. Mm-hmm. I think that's quite strong there. But that's all I know, personally.
So then, how does our ethnicity, our culture,
mm-hmm.
then shape, define, have drawbacks on our sexuality?
Mm.
Is that a whole different topic? So we have the issues of being English, British, Bengali. How do we fit in? How do we adapt our culture and mm-hmm. our cultural values to fit in with our Britishness?
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you then have the LGBT stuff, true, which might be, which is might be another block to
yeah,
to how we live.
I mean, for me, it's expected that you get married to a man. Your mm-hmm. parents will. Some, unfortunately, in extreme cases, you'll get forced. But mm-hmm. personally, my parents wouldn't force me. Yeah. But they would definitely encourage it. Mm-hmm. I'm already being encouraged. And they'll try and choose someone. And I think my family so far, what I've seen is always been quite mutual. And because everyone else has those ethics and cultural beliefs that I don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm more like, I don't want this. This isn't me. I am queer. I don't want to marry some man, have babies, live that life, be a housewife, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So thankfully they're not forceful, but it's the fact that they expect me to, and that's what they want. And it's a whole, there's also this other layer that's like, you've got to please your parents.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, you can't not do this. You'll disappoint your parents. They birthed you. They brought you into this world. They did all this and all that. But it's like, but I don't want to do that because I won't be happy, and I want to please them,
mm-hmm.
but I don't want to be miserable for the rest of my life.
So how do you work that? How do you negotiate that?
Well, actually, at first, like, at any chance I could, when it be brought up, I'm not getting married to some okay. random dude. Like, I'm not getting married to a dude. I'm not getting married to some random dude.
Mm-hmm.
Emphasis on dude.
Yeah.
But now I've been questioning my sexuality quite a lot recently. And I'm also feeling like maybe if, I think it's more having the actual child as well, and things like sex
mm-hmm.
and romantic
mm-hmm.
kind of things that I'm uncomfortable with. And the idea of that makes me like, I don't want that. So maybe, best case scenario, I end up with some closeted gay man,
mm-hmm.
and they live their secret life, I live my secret life.
Well, yeah, is that something that can be done? Do you know, I've heard of that, so I know
I feel like it could happen, but how would it happen?
Do you know what? The internet's a wonderful place. I'm sure there's, yeah.
But then there's also the thing that the family needs to know them, because usually how it works, I think my family will have, like, a relative who has a friend who has a son.
Oh, okay.
Or it's like, oh, my sister's cousin's
yeah.
friend's
yeah.
son wants to get married,
okay.
and etc. It's like, there's yeah. this ongoing joke that, like, every single Bengali person knows every other Bengali
mm-hmm.
person. There's an entire network that none of us understand, but it's there.
Okay. But if you just brought a guy home...
I wouldn't want to.
No, I mean, if you found a closeted gay guy and said to your parents... Do you know, I found someone. Would they be okay with that? Or they'd be like,
I
no,
don't
I,
know.
I have
idea.
To choose him.
But honestly, I'm not that worried about it right now.
Okay.
I'm more worried about my own personal life. So I'm just sort of like, I want to focus on me and like my education and work and stuff like that. And my parents agree. My parents both want me to go to university.
Okay.
So like, if you go to university, we don't care. We'll wait
okay,
till you're 26.
That's fine then. I was going to say, will there be a cutoff where your family going, come on now. You're
there was
your
actually
age.
A bit of argument a while ago, but it got... freeze over because I was like, listen, by the age of 20 I want to be in university, like
mm-hmm.
25, and then they backed off because
okay.
they're like, okay, just do something.
So you need to do it just to
yeah. I feel like that's a big thing in my life. It's a lot of just doing things. Like I was gonna say before, with the Bengali culture, a lot of it you don't see it as your culture, you just see it as I'm gonna put up with it just for my parents so that they won't harp on about it. So I don't really embrace my Bengali culture because I don't like a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just put up with a lot of it, and I'd like to be able to embrace it, but that requires a lot of learning and growth. And because I don't learn anything, I don't know much about Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, because
mm-hmm.
all I know is, like, I can't remember which way around it was, but I think Pakistan, it was all Pakistan, then India got their independence, then Bangladesh got their independence from India. And that's something I only learned, like, a few years ago. But I don't know anything about Bangladesh itself or much about it, and it's because I don't try and learn it. I just put with whatever my parents are telling me because
okay.
I want to reject all of it because I don't feel part of it.
Yeah.
But now I'm feeling a bit different about it.
Okay.
So and that's why I found it interesting you guys talking about mixed race, because for me it's like Bangladesh culture is there. That's it. That's all you have.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be the same. But with you both, you're brought up in Britain, brought up in England, and you've got the English side of yourselves,
mm-hmm.
and then you've got Nicole, you've got the Jamaican,
mm-hmm.
Elena's got the Cuban, and but it's not there prominently.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like it's there.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't have any English in my family.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing. It's just
yeah.
Bengali. That's it. So it's interesting, definitely. Yeah. And now you both talk about your sexualities.
I was just thinking about in terms of family anyway. Now that you've been speaking about it more, I feel like there's like two sides in a way, like what I want and I feel like what I have to do, like to be a part of the family, if you like, just because of what my parents say, like, you'll do this for us, right? And when I go to Cuba to see my other family, I don't really speak any Spanish, and my mum wants me to learn, and I feel like I should learn because I have lots of family over there that know me, even though I don't really know them well because I can't really talk to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I just, but I really don't want that, and it's weird because, you know, I've learned other languages and felt more like myself in those languages rather than something like Spanish, because I
remember you telling me that Spanish is quite gendered. And the reason you love, like, Finnish quite a lot is because it's not gendered.
Yeah, that's a big thing. I feel like it's not just in the language that you speak in every day, which would be gendered, but it's also, I feel like, the attitudes that it forms through that as well. Like I'll hear things about, or I'll see things where I'll be over there and some construction's being done because me and my mum were saving up to build my abuela a house, just like a better house so it's not like leaking, got a working shower and things like that. And only the guys will be asked to do it. Only the males in the family will be asked to do it. I've not seen any women. They just like take care of the children and things like that. Or when it comes to dancing or making food, like it's only ever the women doing that kind of thing. So I feel like it's not just in the language, or just in the music that I hear when they play them as well. Although my Spanish isn't very great, I feel a lot of that, and it's not comfortable for me. So, yeah, again, there's like a part of me that feels like I should be a part of that, but I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's sort of been like for me growing up.
Yeah, there's that part of you that's like, that's my culture, I've got to accept it, and I don't want to reject it like everyone else is.
Yeah.
And I've got to do something, it's got to be part of me. But then there's also the part that's like, I don't agree with it. Mm-hmm. There's so much.
I guess we're in a privileged place, aren't we, where we can pick things that we want to be a part of and have in our lives, and then reject other things. I guess for some of us as well, that might be a fight against parenting or family values, but we still have that option that we can, if we're strong enough, brave enough, if we want to pick what we want to believe in and pick what we want to reject.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My family in Cuba have not really known about me liking women. I think because I had to tell my family first here. I don't know. And I'm not obviously confident communicating in myself. My sister sort of said it for me, and not really at a time that I wanted either. Oh. Yeah, but I suppose because of lack of communication again, it's kind of hard. But it's not like I got anything positive either. It's just like I feel like there was a conversation that I wasn't really involved in, and then now they know.
Even though it's about you.
Exactly, even though it's about me, and you know maybe that'll just wipe from their minds, or they just don't really care, but it felt hard either way. It's not something that I wanted to do, and I don't know why.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should probably mention that. I'm, like, completely in the closet about my sexuality and my gender and everything to my parents. Like, they don't know anything, and that's mostly out of fear that maybe they'll kick me out. And from what I've heard from conversations, like, for example, I once heard my uncle saying how disgusting it is that guys are wearing skinny jeans and stuff, and it's like, that's so queer and it's gay and it's bad, and our religion says it's not, but I don't believe in that religion. And like, I remember once managing to get my mum to talk to me about LGBT plus rights, and how I actually have revealed to them that I try to do a bit of like fighting for those rights, and it's important to me. And she said stuff like, if it doesn't concern me, I don't want to be involved and stuff like that. And she had said quite often that it's not natural. And I said, but I'm just going to tell you now that the way, same way you said, if it's not important to you, you're not going to bother about it. This is important to me, so I'm going to fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
And she did say, like, please don't get too involved. And I imagine she meant, like, riots and protests. Mm. And that I can understand as, like, she's my mother. She doesn't want me to be in danger and stuff. But, yeah, I'm completely in the closet. So I just wanted to put that out.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about your sexual situation,
Nicola? Okay. I came out in the 80s. I came out when I was 15. Long time ago. And it was fine. It was just fine. I think my family knew. I never had a boyfriend, never had any, just, never had a girlfriend either, but I didn't, it was fine, yeah. I'd never had any problems with it, thankfully, touch wood.
That's good.
So yeah, no, you hear absolute horror stories, so I know that my experience is absolute privilege. It was just a sail through, complete sail through. Yeah, and all my family, my extent, everyone knows, and everyone embraces it, and my nephews and nieces know, and people come to Pride. My mum's come to Pride with me before, and really, really nice and open.
I've not really ever asked my family to go to Pride with me or anything. Maybe because I don't like Pride that much. Like, it's okay, but it's very corporate for me, and I don't know. I don't really drink alcohol, and it's not a very dry space, so there's that too. But I guess I came out when I was 13. It was really bad though, because I was like, I've got to tell you something. And I was just like proper beating around the bush. We sat down in the living room for ages. And my mum was trying to be nice, like, yeah, it's okay. Because my dad just used to say a lot of things just that weren't nice about gay people. I can't really remember, but negative things. But, you know, ever since that, I felt a bit more confident in myself, but not really until, like, years and years later, until I went to college and started an LGBTQ plus social group and then found the Proud Trust and actually spend time with queer people. But even then, like, after I told my parents, because I'd never dated any guys, I did constantly get asked questions by either, usually my mum or my sister, like, but how do you know if you've never been out with a guy? Like, you know, oh, this is just a phase, my sister would constantly say, and I'd say, no, it's not. It really isn't. This is just the way I feel, and it's annoying to not be respected in that sense of just having your own opinion in it or just knowing how you feel.
Do you think it's different for queer people of colour to come out? Do you think we're treated different? Do you think...
Yeah, you just reminded me of something because you said phase, and I remember actually I once did tell my mum that I was a lesbian.
Yeah.
And she did tell me, like, she was like, it's a phase, because I was saying it with the mental health thing as well. I was like, I'd been hiding a lot and I'd been bottling a lot up, and I remember it was like behind a locked door, and it was like, we were just shouting through the door at each other or something, like talking through the door. And I said, I'm a lesbian, and I've mentioned my mental health, and she's like, oh no, it's all a phase, it's just a phase, it'll pass by, and that sucked. And I know you just asked a question, but I also just wanted to mention, it, like, I think we've all had mental health problems, and how has your, like, home culture and being a person of colour affected that? Because for me, for definite, I feel like whenever it's brought up, my family acts as if it doesn't exist. Like, nothing, your mental health can't be, there's what? Depression? No. And anxiety, that doesn't exist and stuff like that. And it just makes it harder accepting your mental health and being able to be open with them, because you don't want to be told, that's not real, it's fine, you're just being overdramatic or, like, stuff like that.
And that's really interesting saying that, because 60% of people have got... People of colour are 60% more likely to have mental health issues than white people. So how interesting is that? That we're more likely to have mental health issues than white people, but you're still being questioned about, well, how can that be real?
Yeah.
How's that so?
Maybe since my mother grew up in Cuba and it's quite different there. And I don't really know what the government services are like there and just, like, general support for people. But I think it'll be... To me, it seems natural that she'll know less about the things that that are provided here in the UK. And, you know, I'll tell her about things sometimes that I've been told just at school. And it's fine that she doesn't know, but she really doesn't know about things. So she'll be surprised and be like, oh, really? So, yeah, if I've ever tried to say anything about mental health, first of all, it won't really be acknowledged very much. And then they'll just start talking about what they've been through, which is really annoying because it's like, I need the space to talk about this. But also, she doesn't know anything. Like a sign of something, which could represent something and maybe say, oh, maybe you should get help for this, but also what help there actually could be.
So that's like a barrier, isn't it? That's a cultural barrier. So it's not like she's not saying that's not real.
Yeah.
She just doesn't, she can't recognise that and understand that's a thing.
Yeah.
But what you're saying is a bit different.
Yeah, actually, like how you're saying your mum would like start on about it. They've been through, did you say? Yeah, that. I've actually found with my mum, because I recently started addressing my mental health and actually trying to get help actively.
Yeah.
And I've noticed now my mum is sort of, like, I've overheard her once or two times on the phone, like, crying to her siblings and saying, you guys never ask me how I'm doing, or, like, I don't get to tell you how I'm doing, or, like, I need to talk about you guys, like, make me feel sad or whatever. And I thought, like, I related that back to what I was saying to her, because I'd been saying, like, the exact same thing to her the other day. And I think me actually going and finding and addressing my problems is actually making her realise, oh, I also have problems. She still refuses to get help and stuff like that. She still, I think she's one of those believers that, like, antidepressants will make you worse or you'll get addicted and all of it's fake and everything's wrong and, like, nothing's going to work. But, and I was going to link it to how I said at the beginning, we feel like as the minority, we have to battle for ourselves in public. I also feel like we're also battling at home, because, well, we're queer people of colour. That is minority within minority. And we feel like in public, we're fighting for ourselves. But especially, I will say personally for me, I feel like I'm battling at home because I'm actively trying to change my family's minds about, like, gender stereotypes and things like that.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it outside. And it's, like, constant battling to just exist. Yeah. And it sucks.
It's like, where's the safe space in all this? Yeah. To just relax and not have to do that constantly. It gets difficult, I think.
We hope you enjoyed listening and that you got an insight into the experiences and views of the women who took part. We'd like to thank the Young Women's Health Project in partnership with the Proud Trust and our funders, the National Lottery Community Fund and the Tampon Tax Fund from the Government Office of Civil Society. And thanks to Angel at Virgin Money for helping us with recording and editing. Please check out the other recordings in this series.